Hello and welcome to What's Brewing, CISFA? What's Brewing, CISFA is a podcast produced for the California Community Colleges Student Financial Aid Administrators Association. I'm your host, Dennis Schrader. I serve as the 2020-2021 CISFA president.
And I'm Dana Yarbrough, Dennis's fellow employee at Los Angeles Mission College.
What's Brewing, CISFA hopes to inform and entertain you 30 minutes at a time.
So, let's start the show. And welcome to another episode of What's Brewing, CISFA. Let's start this show with our first cup.
All right, Dana, three-day weekend.
Hey.
I assume you're putting something to supercharge in your cup this morning?
Oh, man. Really. I'm actually kind of, I'm ready to go.
Yeah?
I'm ready to go because, yeah. So today I'm drinking, both of you and I, we're into the Pellegrinos, the water.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So I got one of the spritzers, lemon zest.
Oh, okay. Good. Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, because, man, we got to get, I'm ready.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm just having some raspberry tea.
Okay.
The cold kind.
All righty.
With the sugar and the caffeine and all that good stuff.
So you ready too?
I hope so. Yeah, it's another week. It's only 4 days, but that doesn't mean I have 5 days of work to do. That's why vacation days, holidays, there's still stuff to be done.
Always. My mom used to call it the never-ending story only to be continued.
That sounds pretty accurate,
Yeah.
It sounds very accurate, yeah. Well, before we even get to our new stuff, we are working on the CISFA conference.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just a lot of stuff to get organized.
Oh, yeah.
For that. And so
it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I can only imagine because it's going to be more of it's going to be an e-convening. There's a lot of maybe elements. Maybe extra work, cause a little extra.
Well, the piecing together of things, we've gotten presenters all pretty much lined up. We still got to create a couple sessions out of thin air, but that'll be easy because it'll be stuff that's more topical. But most of the people who were going to present last year will get to present this year. And,
that's awesome.
But what we're asking many of them to do is to pre-record their sessions. Because
mm-hmm.
if you've gone to any of these current virtual conferences, the liveness part, that's the part that virtual conferences are just not good at anyways. Because you can't have a room of 500 people coming up to a microphone to ask questions and stuff,
Mm-hmm.
Audio quality, timing, bad internet connections, all those things start to then really make a difference. So it tends to be better from the people we're working with at the state system office to pre-record as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And then you can have your presenters during the sessions when they air or go live, be available to do Q&A.
Nice.
So people can, be entering it in a chat box, a Q&A box, whatever the software is in the platform you're using. But in a sense, the whole session is otherwise pre-recorded.
So the attendee will watch the pre-recording, and as they're watching the pre-recording, they're able to ask questions through the chat.
Exactly.
Feature.
Yeah.
And then the person presenting will be live answering the questions through the chat. Okay.
Yeah, because otherwise, I was to do a live presentation and you were asking questions, well, I'm trying to read my PowerPoint and stay focused, it gets to be a little tough. I have to break in during my talk, or I have to wait and put off and type in answers afterwards. So this seems to be the way that probably will work the best.
Yeah.
And we're hoping as many of them will. So they'll have basically like the next 3 to 5 weeks to do the pre-recordings. And then our chancellor's office staff do whatever technical stuff they have to do. And then we hopefully from there, just load them up.
Yeah.
And run them through, and we'll have regular breakout sessions. We'll have a keynote. We'll have a president's reception on Wednesday night of the conference. This is all the first week of March. And so I'm not really sure what I'm doing on that quite yet.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I haven't quite figured that out. So I have to work on some of that. And yeah, we'll have our business meeting on the last day where we'll do all of our award recipients for last year and this year, because we didn't have a conference last year to give out our, our outstanding service award, mm-hmm. our Hall of Fame award, awards of merit. And then we've obviously put out there, and this is something, Dana, you can nominate people across the state if you want. We have our award cycle just started for this year.
Okay.
So those are due soon. In case you want to nominate anyone, again, any of the community colleges or people that we work with, if they fall into those categories. Hopefully all our CSFA people received an email maybe about a week ago from David Shook, our webmaster, regarding this.
Nice.
So be on the lookout.
I will.
That's what I'm saying. All right. Are we ready for some news?
Let's do this.
All right. We don't have a whole lot of items, but some of them are really long. So the first one's really short. So I was reading Inside Higher Ed, one of the websites out there that's pretty useful for stuff in general about higher ed. They had an article about higher ed workers get in the COVID vaccine line. And in the article, it discussed, where we all fall as far as tiers and, what our orderliness of how soon we can get it and all. And so it made me think, Dana, did we not just get a memo from our own district, just kind of as a pre-warning about when we might be able to get our own vaccine?
We sure did. Mm-hmm.
So I think they said as early as maybe February, right?
Right. Uh-huh.
So yeah, it's not too far off out there, but it's an interesting article. Because you've got people beyond just healthcare workers. I think then it's like people over the age of 65. Mm-hmm. And then it people in education fall shortly thereafter because, of the a number of interactions we could be having with people up close, numbers. And then also just the size of education when you're talking about classrooms and people on campus and things like that. So you haven't gotten yours yet. You haven't jumped the line yet, have you now, Dana?
Oh, no, no, no. No, I'm perfectly okay with waiting, mm-hmm. Until it's readily available, I do believe in, I agree with, I guess, this idea of the tiers, of who should be getting it. And yeah, so I'm okay. I'm good. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm fine wherever it is. I mean, I was just talking to my mother and she's like, "You're not going to get it, are you?" I'm going, "Why? Why would I not get it, mother?" "I don't know." She couldn't remember. I'm sure there must be one of my other brothers who must have said that he wasn't going to get it for whatever reason. Uh-huh. But I said, no, why would I not want to get it? If it offers up, that we move this thing along quicker, we get back to campus quicker, safely.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
Yes. Uh-huh. I'll take two. Oh, they already give you two, right?
Yeah, they do.
Maybe I'll take a third just for the heck of it.
I was going to say for you, just because you get a third, maybe even a fourth one.
Yeah. People know me. I'm a big guy. Two might not be enough. I'm just saying. Just looking at numbers.
Oh, man. So, yeah, perfectly okay with hanging on and waiting in there.
Yeah. Soon, it's coming soon, hopefully.
Lord willing.
That's what it sounds like.
All right, Dennis, some more news from the Public Policy Institute of California, an article titled "The Year Ahead in Higher Education." Some key points noted in the article as areas to keep a watch on in the new year include physical relief for institutions and students, equitable access to UC and CSU, student debt and financial aid reform, development of a longitudinal data system, and career education. Not a lot of in-depth info in the article, but it helps you understand the big stuff that we will face in higher ed this year.
Yeah, I read the same article, and the stuff that, touches on our areas, is obviously student debt and the financial aid reform. Mm-hmm. So even at a state level, obviously there's pressure at the federal level to look at student debt relief. I think this is going to be one of those that hopefully is a longer conversation than some think it will be, just because I know there's, you know, discussion of, well, the incoming president, once he's incoming and in, mm-hmm. You know, he could maybe do some stuff by executive order, such.
Right.
But I'd hope that they take a much more nuanced approach than just canceling out everyone's debt. Because if and the reason is, or even say, like, we're going to cancel out 10 or 20, 30,000 of everyone's, you know.
Uh-huh.
Because we have to, you know, if you want to talk about equity, people keep forgetting that it's not always so much the dollar amounts that matter as much as what you borrowed it for, where you borrowed it from, and what were your outcomes. So in other words, a student who went to Harvard, took out $50,000 and is working in high finance doesn't have the same impact as a student who took out $10,000, went to a career college and never finished, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because that student is more likely unemployed or underemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And thus his relief is much more important. So I think that's why I hope that one, they're not just going to blanketly, you know, remove a lot of debt.
Because
as nice as that is, I don't think there's a bit of equity to it. I think we really should be looking at who's the most direly impacted. The students with the high debt in either fields that, again, did not pay off, or they've been unemployed or underemployed for long periods, or possibly those, again, that did not finish. Those are probably the worst off of students. When we look at our default rates and delinquency rates on loans, those tend to be the students, and regardless of the amount, you know, even $5,000, and if you never completed your degree program, that could mean that you never saw that extra income that you would have earned by completing your program.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, like you're saying, what type of or how they're going to address it. Some of the information that I've been coming across or articles that I've been reading are more along the lines of, and I know you've heard it, probably heard it, and our listeners have probably heard it, is, you know, this $10,000 for everybody. And then I've read some articles where there is possibility based on your employment, it can be $10,000 up to 5 years, so a total of $50,000.
Yeah.
So again, like you said, it's kind of in the air. We really don't know, and it'll be interesting to see how they move forward with it.
Yeah, everything at this point is just somewhat of a throw it out there to see what sticks and what might work. And I think it's one of those things, you wait till everyone goes, well, it sounds good enough.
But I've definitely been you know, following along because, you know, I've shared this on the show. I am one of those individuals that, I do have a lot of
student loans,
debt. So it'll be interesting to see again, you know, what'll be decided.
Well, keep your fingers crossed. I'm already paid off. Maybe I'll have to go back to school real quickly here. Anyways, well, you know, at least we're working. And since we're working, there's training out there, everybody, if you didn't know, as we always like to put out there. So CASFA is offering up some NASFA-U authorized training on R2T4 on Wednesday, January 20th. That's tomorrow. So you better download this podcast today so you know about it for tomorrow. So the course will provide an overview of the provisions of R2T4 and examine how to handle a student's Title IV funds when they withdraw before completing the payment period or period of enrollment. That's the whole thing about R2T4, right? Real sexy stuff. The good thing is this training only costs $50. So more information is available at CASFA.org/training.
Awesome. And Dennis, if this is too expensive for you, the following Wednesday, January 27th, there's free training titled Understanding or Decoding the ICER. Guidance and Best Practices. For more information on this, go to the same CASFA webpage on training.
Dana, I'll put it out there. If you want to go to either one of these trainings,
I'm good. I can do this.
You can go. I mean, we'll find a way to pay for that $50.
And you know, and I just have this burning passion for R2T4. You know?
I bet you do. Oh, you're lucky you're not the one in the office doing it.
Oh, man.
I wonder if our fellow employee listens to this who does it.
God bless her. She is a gem to do that, right?
I just remember here's how much I've had to deal with R2T4 directly. I remember when it came out And I was at another college, because this was back mid-90s, late 90s, when they switched up the whole refund withdrawal world as far as how this was done. And I kind of remember having to help out our person who did it in the office. Well, I was at a university, so the way the jobs are split up was a little different. But other than that, and hearing about it at conferences, and obviously keeping up on the updates as things have rolled around and, you know, overseeing it, having to do like a hand one, I haven't done that for a long time.
Mm.
Maybe when I first started LA Mission, because we were just a little behind, I believe, at that point on some of the R2T4 calc. So I had to be the one that had to do the double checking.
My goodness. I remember I went to FSA a couple of years ago in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the R2T4 training, right?
Okay.
Dennis, I think maybe like 10 minutes in, they lost me. Like, I can't tell you anything. Like,
it's a little like calculus, everybody. Because it's all, for those who are not financial aid people out there, my friend Mikey K, who listen to the podcast, in short, R2T4 is return to Title IV.
Yes.
And it's this whole process you have to do when a student drops out completely from a semester. And if they haven't been in the semester long enough, they have to repay some of their financial aid. Generally, the rule is if what? You make 60% or more of the semester before you completely drop out. You've earned 100% of the money. Mm-hmm. So it's not a straight day-to-day. You have to be in 100% to get 100%. You get through 60% of the point before you drop out completely. You've earned 100%. But if you drop out sooner, that's where the hard math comes in,
there,
right?
Uh-huh.
And I do mean the hard math of trying to figure this all out.
Oh, boy. Yeah, so God bless all of you listening who handle R2T4 on your campus. Yes. And, man,
you're the jewels of your office there.
Yes, you are.
Absolutely.
Yes, you are.
Well, let's take a little musical interlude here before we head into our next segment, Dana.
And we're back for our second cup on the What's Brewing CISFA show.
Time for a refill.
Let's get it going, man.
All right. Well, we've certainly got plenty of news items left to go over, and some of these are the long ones, right?
Oh, man, we better have our audience members. I'm telling you, strap on your seatbelts.
That's right. Be ready. Here we go. So I'll take the first one that's super long. FSA published an electronic announcement last Friday detailing the updated waivers and modifications of statutory and regulatory provisions under the HEROES Act. The electronic announcement says a notice was published in the Federal Register on December 11th with the updates and modifications that fall under the authority of the Higher Education Relief Opportunities for Students Act of 2003. That's the HEROES Act. There's a lot of boring stuff at the front of this electronic announcement that many of us don't work with on a regular daily basis, stuff like related to audits and such. But there are a lot of things that are key to the work that me and you, Dana, and all our financial aid people out there deal with on a regular basis. For example, did you know that FSA waived the requirement that electronic funds transfers, or EFTs, to students had to be direct deposit? That's what it used to have to be, right? And that's what we do.
Right.
We use a company to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can do person-to-person payments using methods like Zelle or PayPal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or use a student's debit card number to transfer a Title IV credit balance to a checking account using a credit transaction. You know, I guess kind of like punching the numbers and all.
Okay.
You know, this item alone was done just recently to help expedite refunds to students, including emergency grants. Because, again, you know, we find this to be the issue in our campus and district, and I'm sure many are. We want to get the money out there fast to students when we have this CARES money and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, of course, some students who never had financial aid before aren't set up with our third-party company
right
to get their refunds. And we don't want to send paper checks because you know what happens to paper checks?
Yeah.
They are instantly lost.
I was going to just say that. And most of our students who, like you're saying, that don't sign up to our third party, that's what will happen is like 20, and it's like 21 days later then they get the check. Yeah.
Exactly. So they're just completely out of luck. So it's good to see that happen. Now, there's something here that might affect you, as we just talked about student loans. So FSA waived the annual requirement for a borrower to provide documentation that enables recalculation of his or her income-driven repayment amount for one calendar year from the date on which the borrower would have had to been required to provide that recertification. Borrowers will be notified by above their new deadlines by their servicer. Was this something that you saw, Dana? Are you on an income-driven repayment plan?
Yeah, and it's interesting, Dennis, because I did get the email to recertify, or excuse me, to do the...
Oh, you did?
Yeah. So maybe what I'll do is I will maybe go online and log on my account and see if what updates have been made.
Yeah, again, this is something recent, and this was, I think this was a... an added waiver and flexibility item. Because some of these have been around since as early as May and are just being extended. For example, you know, these are some of the waivers and flexibilities announced earlier in 2020 that were extended to the end of either the first payment period that begins after the date this COVID emergency ends. And for example, like the waiver of the federal requirement to obtain state authorization to offer distance education. That's something key to a lot of schools. That's where like an out-of-state student who lives out-of-state takes classes with us while being out-of-state. Officially, you have to have authorization from our school, would have to have authorization from their state to offer education to them. You know, it's a state-to-state kind of thing. Okay. And so not every state quite does that. And if you're not set up, you officially, you can't offer those students education. Now, if they come here and live here, that's different. It's when they're living out of state. But they've waived that whole requirement for now. Let's see here. There's also a waiver of the requirement that an institution must obtain accrediting agency approval prior to offering distance education programs. Again, that's being extended because, again, that just kind of happened, you know, middle of spring semester last year. So that, you know, that was something that just came right upon us without any time. We have a waiver of the parental signature requirement for verification in the event that it cannot be obtained. And then there's a bunch of other flexibilities here. Again, and if you read some of the earlier electronic announcements, you can see a good summary of that. There's so much more in that electronic announcement. I'm going to leave it to the listeners to go ahead and read it. How's that, Dana?
I think that is a great idea.
There's just so much there.
Yes, there is.
Why don't you take us into something else? Maybe some good news, I hope.
Well, as a balance to all of the detail and complexities of that electronic announcement, a separate one was released last week, Thursday, with lots of good news. Dated January 14th, the subject of the announcement reads as follows. U.S. Department of Education quickly makes available more than $21 billion in taxpayer funds to support continued education at colleges and universities. As mentioned in one of our episodes last week, most of the California community colleges and all colleges across the U.S. should expect to receive quite a bit more than they did in the first CARES funds sent to campuses late last spring. The funding allocated to the Higher Education Emergency Relief Fund, too, or known as HERF2, comes from the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act, or CRRSAA, signed into law on December 27. The CRRSAA appropriated a total of $82 billion for education. So, Dennis, when do we get to spend these new dollars?
Unfortunately, the federal government doesn't believe in Zelle and PayPal to my account. So
or direct deposit to our students' accounts.
No, we are trying to avoid, what do they call that? Fraud.
Fraud?
This is not the unemployment system in California now where apparently everybody who shouldn't have got it. Everyone who did deserved it may have gotten it. And I know some people who are still waiting to get theirs and are getting held up because of all that.
Yes.
So I haven't seen the money yet, but boy. I think it's, again, because it routes through our district, mm-hmm. it will be there soon. And then we're going to be working on a plan and we're trying to do it soon on how to utilize this money. Cause as I, you know, mentioned, I think in our prior show, most of us are getting quite a bit more money. So we have to figure out a way how to properly spend that money. So yeah, soon enough, absolutely. Dana, it will be going out to our students and used on campus. Obviously, so a lot of this money is also meant to help shore up areas where campuses might be a little low on funds, you know, between right. training mm-hmm. and Zoom and all these other mm-hmm. things we've had to buy. There's a lot of work out there, no doubt. Well, let's do one more news item here for the day. So as one of the people who's processed a lot of Cal grants in the past, Dana, have you been keeping up on the California Student Aid Commission's grant delivery system modernization project?
Oh, no. Oh. I don't know. Well, I mean, you know, I no longer handle the Cal grant.
Exactly. But you'd maybe heard of this project of theirs. And you've probably seen some of the outline of what's going on.
Oh, yes, yes. This is their, they're changing their systems. Yes,
that's right.
Uh-huh, yes.
So in their January newsletter, which we'll link in our show notes, the commission lays out what's already been done and accomplished on the project and what they expect in 2021. So back in December, apparently the Interactive Voice Recognition, or IVR, voice response system was to go live. And that's for students where, you know, it's kind of like, tell us your name, mm-hmm. tell us your problem, and it's all automated. Also, a chatbot messaging system, primarily, again, aimed at students, was launched and is out there. And now for this year, we're looking at a number of big items. In particular, the California Dream Act application, or CADA, will have the same easy-to-use look and feel as a student landing page of the web grants system for students.
Oh, that's so good.
You know, and this includes increase in visibility through the approval and award process. Also, the CADA will be made to scale properly if you're using a smartphone or a tablet, so it'll look correct on the form on screen. And then for us working in financial aid offices, web grants for institutions will have a new and improved look and feel. Current functionality is going to be preserved with improvements in the presentation of information that we use.
Oh, that
so
is that's so
that's the
good.
Part that we're, yes. We're waiting for. And then lastly, training. So CSAC will, the Student Aid Commission, will provide training through a new e-learning platform they're using for high school counselors, administrators, financial aid administrators, and even students on what all these changes mean. So it's good to see the project's been moving along so well.
Yeah.
We'll have a link to this newsletter. It's got some interesting stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. Because that interface on the admin side, ooh.
Yeah. It was definitely ready for.
It's time.
For some updates, right?
It's time.
Absolutely. Well, it's time here, Dana. Let's take another short musical interlude and head into our last sip. And just like that, we move into our last sip segment, everybody. So get that last sip on. Dana, any I Dare You To selections for today?
No. I'm so sorry.
I don't have any either. I think I'm going to save it, seeing where we are on time. I had a couple books that both have the word tyranny in it and has nothing to do with government, amazingly.
Oh, boy.
But we'll talk about them later. The book that I just got back from one of our co-employees that I'd lent out while she was working on her MBA, The Tyranny of Email, one of my favorite books.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Which is useful just in general office practices. And another one that's related, not quite to that, but called The Tyranny of Metrics. And it's an interesting take on the whole idea of how we talk about being data-driven and using metrics all the time, right? Measuring things. And mm-hmm. This book kind of talks to the effect of, are we measuring the right things at the right time and actually measuring things that are useful for what we're trying to accomplish? So I'm going to save those for another day because, you know, we're at that point here, Dana, where I think we've actually literally ran out of time almost. Only because I know we both have things coming up later this morning.
Oh, yes, we
and
do.
And through the week. So, and I hear your phone ringing off. So, you know,
it's
wow.
Time.
And that,
it's
that's
time.
One way of knowing that the show must end here soon.
That's our marker right there.
Yeah. So I want to thank my co-host Dana for joining us here today on What's Brewing CISWA. And thank you, our audience, for tuning in.
And hey, everyone. Check out the CISWA website at CISWA.org. That's CCCSFAAA.org. And if you have something to say or you have topics you want us to discuss, email us at WBCISWA@gmail.com.
For this and all What's Brewing CISWA podcasts, find our feed through Google Podcasts at podcast.google.com. Or for those using Apple devices, open your Apple Podcasts app. To find us, search for CISWA. You can also find our episodes at wbcisfa.podbean.com. That's the words pod and bean put together. And you can find us on Spotify and Pandora and iHeartRadio and on the TuneIn app on your Amazon Echo by using Alexa.
What's Brewing CISWA is a production of Studio 1051, a creative collaboration of Dennis and myself.
This has been episode number 56, recorded the morning of Tuesday, January 19th, 2021. Have a great day.
And have a great week.